Well, thank you very much indeed, Jennifer, for sharing some of your memories with us. If you could just say for the tape your name, where we are, and just your date of birth.
My name is Jennifer Lees. I was in my home in Douglas Road, Peel, and I was born in March 1934.
Well, as you know, we're researching the history of the island's tourist trade, and I believe that you have had various jobs in that over the years, and one of those was working in the Villa Marina.
That's right, yes. Ice cream girl. The first year I was there, I had to go around the lawn with a tray, but I wasn't very successful because a tension hook blew off and I got into terrible trouble because it was lost, and that was a terrible crime. It sort of involved my mother being rung up. But I eventually graduated as a kiosk, and it was tremendously busy. Bathing Beauty Day was an exception. Every Thursday, we'd be having our lunch and we'd look out of the window and see the queues stretching from the front door of the Villa Marina down to right down the arcade, and from the side door right up Broadway. Then the gates would open at a certain set hour and they'd come tearing across the lawn and take their place, of course, trying to get to the front. A little aisle left for the beauties who came out of the pavilion, which is now gone. And Jack Leon was the man in charge of the band, and he started every week with the same gambit: good afternoon, music lovers. And then he would say, well, the girls are getting dressed. And they had a few more gambits like that, but same thing every week. We got very used to that. But it was busy on other days. There were talent competitions, there were fashion shows. Of course, Joe Loss was in the Villa Ballroom, and they were packing them in. And a town councillor complained that there were 6,000 people a night kicking themselves to death in the Villa Marina. And the next night, Joe Loss played I Get a Kick Out of You. But it wasn't just a dance, it was a show. And a half of the Villa Marina floor was always taken up with people standing, listening to the singers. And then there was half left for dancing. It was a terrific time. Saturdays was the chaos, because on Saturdays, the hotels and boarding houses didn't serve lunch. See, in those days, a lot of people had full board, which I find incredible, because it's so inconvenient to have to go back for lunch. But this Saturday, there were no lunches because they were changing their beds. So we had a special menu on a Saturday, just a set lunch. Other days, it was a la carte. And the queues would start about 11 o'clock for that, and we had to let them in. Went back from the kiosk into the cafe on these busy days. We let them in sittings and watched them eat their meat and two veg, and then poured them out. The next lot came in, just went on till about 2:30 in the afternoon. It was incredible.
Can you remember how many people they might have served?
Oh, I couldn't give you a number. The Villa Marina was altered now completely, but it was a pretty large cafe. It was two sort of sections, like an L-shaped, and it was full. And yet it was tremendous. Business was booming, it really was.
What sort of things would be served at the cafe?
Well, as an ordinary time, it was very very boring, really. There was egg and chips, ham and chips, fish and chips, I think pie and chips, peach melbas, where we were supposed to say that the cream was real and it wasn't. Ice cream. I remember one waitress saying, and this old lady said to me, "It is fresh cream, isn't it, dear?" "Yes, madam, God forgive me." But on a Saturday, it was just a meat and two veg and a set pud, and they just had to take that or starve. And on a Sunday, we didn't have many in on Sunday, so she did actually cook. They did cook us, the staff, a really nice roast dinner, and it was a nice one. It wasn't quite so, because, of course, the Saturday meat was cooked. Heaven knows when. Sliced cold, because it goes much further when it's cold. I remember the teapots were all blue. We used to be going on the blues, and we had to wash and dry the teapots. Oh, so there were hundreds of them. And I was supposed to work till 6. Now, of course, these days, this would never happen if you didn't go home until you were told. And if it was a late night, if they were busy in the cafe, from when the gardens closed, you had to go into the cafe and help to clear up. And it could be 7, could be 7:30. And woe betide the person who went home. A friend of mine went home and she took her apron off at 6 o'clock and said, "I'm only working at 6. She nearly got the sack. And we had a lot of girls, seasonal workers, of course, who sometimes behaved quite badly. And the boss used to go around saying, "Wait till the end of the season, wait till the end of the season," and then she starts sacking them.
So how many people would be working there, and would they be mostly girls?
Yes, there were a lot of Irish girls came over. I think they came every year. how many people? Oh, there'd be about 15 waitresses on of course when they're having their days off, and then there'd be the ice cream. There were two of us in the kiosk, and then there were the one or two casuals who went round the grounds, and of course there was the villa staff, the deck chair boys. One and they were based in the villa, although some were on the promenade. Then there was one in the gardens. That was quite a bit busy job. There were thousands of deck chairs. At least so it appeared to my memory. But every spot was covered, and even on a day when there was nothing particular on, and there were fashion contests. They used to go out in the morning, and spot the people walking up and down the promenade and pick finalists, and bring them in for a final in the afternoon. And one of Joe Loss's band had a very smart wife. She was very attractive, and of course she didn't win, because Joe Loss was one of the judges. And her husband was livid about this, and he said, Joe Loss said to him, "She'll be very proud of your wife, Joe. We'll be very proud of her." He said, "That's not good enough. You know, she should have won." But of course he wouldn't dare to give a member of his band's wife a prize.
So it sounds like the social hub of Douglas in many ways.
It was, yes. And then we had celebrities come. We had Petula Clark, I remember, coming. And I can remember him saying, you know, Jack Leon will speak to us when he's not with Petula Clark. Eamon Andrews coming when he was quite young, before he was famous. Lots of famous people. We used to sort of watch them go through.
can you tell me a bit about how you came to work there in the first place? How did you get the job, and how did you know that the work was available?
Well, everybody works up at what they do now. Students work, and I got into quite a lot of trouble over this actually, because I was 16 and I was staying on at school. I was at a private school, St Francis, and I was going to stay on. I did stay on to sixth form, but I was in dire disgrace because my mother said, "Oh, well, you know, it's time you had a summer job." So I took off from May, and my mother and father got me the job because they knew Doris Madrill, who was ran the cafe very efficiently for the corporation. They knew her very well, and so they got me the job. And I had to behave myself because I knew my parents.
So what was your first day like?
Very confusing. It was rough. I mean, I had come from a private school and quite a sheltered home. It was an education, it was. I mean, my daughter got her education in the local chip shop. I got mine at the Hillmarine. It really was. It was quite tough. Some of them took it out of you. There was a cook down. The kitchens used to be downstairs, and you used to have to go down there to go to the toilets. But I offended the cook. I can't remember what I did, but she thought I was being snooty, and she didn't have to go for me. So I just have to go around the corner after that to the loo's around the corner, with my face going through the kitchen. They would take it out. If they thought you were students, you know, and you were trying to put one over, which I wasn't, but if they suspected you were, they made it very tough for you. There were some good friends. There were some wonderful ones.
Were they strict about what you had to wear?
Oh, yes. I had to wear a white overall, yes, for my ice cream job. Try and keep that clean with ice cream down. And then, of course, in the kiosk, there were three suppliers of mineral waters. There was Downwards, whose motto was ever downward. Qualtro's, whose motto was always on top. And then there was Kelly, who sold very few. But the Qualtro's and the Downwards men were very... there was a lot of competition between them. And I can remember getting into trouble for not displaying the right amount of Downwards, I think it was. They said I'd got all... Well, Qualtro's were nice, you see, I thought. And I displayed more Qualtro's. We were selling more. And the Downwards man came and said, "Look at those shelves. You haven't put our things. You can't see ours." So that was... of course, the corporation had to give... they gave their contracts to everybody. You know, we had Felice's ice cream in the kiosk, which was the nicest one. Then we had Ward's ice cream in the cafe, which wasn't anything like as nice. But they had to be seen to spread their custom around. And we used to have quite a lot of... I won't say interference, but the councillors used to keep an eye on you. There was a town clerk whose wife used to come regularly and, you know, keep an eye on what was... And anything you did went back to the boss.
So when would you start your working day in the kiosk?
Well, I had to be in at 9 o'clock. And that was for cleaning the cafe. And my job was to clean those terrible glass doors. And for the rest of my life, I've always been careful how I go through a door, because I'm so sorry for the people who clean them, the finger marks. You know, I had to clean the brass and I had to clean the glass. And then you have to watch people putting their fingers on it the rest of the day. So I was there, that was from 9 till 10. Now, of course, this again was a different custom. I'd had a good breakfast before I went, because that's how we live. But they'd only had, most of the other staff sort of had a cigarette and a, and a cup of tea. So 10 o'clock everything stopped and they made the tea and they out came the buns and the pies and the terribly unhealthy things, but they all stoked up before. And I think we went out about 10:45 to the kiosk. That's when people started dripping in. And then went on till... The gardens closed for an hour because it was free in the mornings. Unless there was anything special, but it was nearly always free. And then they opened at 2 o'clock and there was a charge because there was there was always a band. And then usually another entertainment. So they shut at 1 and then it was back into the cafe. And it all depended how busy you were when you got your lunch. And that was when you hung on, you know, hungry, what catch the boss's eye because you had to go into the still room, help with the dishes. And sometimes you might be sent for your lunch about 5 to 2 and then you had to open up at 4:15. So a good foundation for indigestion.
So what was your kiosk like? Where was it? And what did it look like?
It was literally a little wooden hut in the Villa Marina grounds. I think it's still there. And there's, it was just room for two of us. Well, there weren't always two of us in it, but quite often there were. And just room for the two of us and the fridges with the ice cream at the back and shelves stocked with minerals, and that was our job. It was quite good fun, really. As long as you were busy, it was awfully boring when you weren't. But we were most of the time. It was a real peak time. I don't remember ever the garden ever being empty. And if it was wet, of course, the entertainment was in the Royal Hall. And that wasn't much fun because you had to pound around the Royal Hall carrying your tray of ice cream, you know, the little tubs. And that wasn't anything like as nice as the grounds.
Can you remember what would be in your ice cream tray? And
just tubs of plain ice cream. Yeah, as far as I can remember, yes.
And how much would they sell for?
Oh, now you're asking me. I can't remember. I only remember the 10-shilling note I lost that blew off my tray was considered a fortune. I think my mother had to pay it, actually. That was an absolute crime, you know, a 10-shilling note. 50p.
So the manager was a strict...
The manager was very strict. Manageress, she was very strict. Her name was Doris Madrill, and her sister-in-law, Gladys, used to help. She wasn't quite as strict. She was very nice. They're all gone. They're gone now. But Miss Madrill was a martinet, really. She kept. She had a nice side, but she kept you... Her main idea was to please the corporation bosses and to, you know, to make it all run. And she was a good manageress, I suppose, really. She had a lot to put up with.
What other characters would be around the place?
Characters? Oh, dear me. Ken the deck chair boy. We're meeting all kinds of people. It's hard to remember. The ballroom staff, of course, used to come in and out. There were the cooks downstairs, the still room workers, the lady on the teapots. You know, she was a nice soul. Had to measure out the tea, and that again was quite funny, because a pot for one click, you see, and that was one helping, pot for two clicks. But of course it resounded into the still room, so the boss could hear, and then you'd hear a voice coming out, "You're putting an awful lot of tea in that pot, love, you know, who's it for?" It was very tight. It certainly was tight. Yeah, it's very tight. And all this, I can't remember how much I was paid. I was paid £2.50 a week, which is what? I don't know. What was it? £2.50. And it went up to the glorious sum of £3 the second year. I don't think I ever got any further than £3 a week. But it was a fortune.
Was it a job that you took for several summers?
3 years I worked there, yes. Yes. It was hard. I was very tired. Sundays as well. Sunday was one of the busiest days. You had one day off a week. Mine was Monday. Sunday was a very busy day in the gardens.
What other sorts of things would be going on in the gardens then, and in the villa?
Well, what was it? The bathing beauties was the big thing. There were talent contests. They were pretty awful. They could go on and on. Fashion shows. That's about all, really. Music was very nice, actually. It was what is my type of music now, but it certainly wouldn't go down very well today. It was an orchestra with soloists. It was very nice. But we didn't have a lot of time to listen to it. But the band, they were all very friendly. I used to meet the band boys from Joe Loss, and it was a friendly sort of atmosphere, really. Howard Jones, who married a local girl and was a singer. Tony Ventro, Rose Brennan, don't know what happened to any of them now. They're probably all gone. We're having a revival on Thursday night with a Todd Miller. So it'll be interesting to see.
So what would you say was the spirit of the place?
Well, I can sum it up. I looked for my autograph book when I was looking for photographs, and I've got them all. All these autographs have been signed, and one, I think perhaps, was written by a woman who came from Laxey, and it really, I think, perhaps did sum up the spirit of the staff. You go to work to earn the money, to buy the food, to give you strength to go to work. So it, it was a good human staff on the whole, but it was hard work, and it wasn't very good pay. It was hard. The ones I was sorry for were the ones with young children. I can remember a girl with two little girls, and coming in and being very upset because one of her children was sick and she'd had to leave her. That was the harder type. The young girls weren't so bad. There wasn't much of a life, really, I don't suppose.
How did the work and condition at the villa, where you were employed by the corporation, mm-hmm. compare with the pay and conditions, say, in the boarding houses, where it was private?
Well, I honestly don't know, because I didn't know. I didn't ever work, and I didn't really know anybody who worked. I had friends who worked in the villa with me, but I don't know. I don't know. So I can't really compare that.
Would most of the staff at the villa be young people doing it for a year or two?
No. Now, there was Millie, who was an absolute character, Millie Nugent, who'd been there, I wouldn't like to say how many years, but she was an institution, and she was there winter and summer, because the Villa Marina did keep a small part of the cafe open in the winter, and one or two of them were regulars, and Millie was a regular. So there were older women, but the younger ones would probably be the seasonal staff. You know, there was droves of them, and the washing up. It was a terribly, terrible still room, because it was how can I describe, sort of oval, you know, you went round, came in one end and out the other, but it was so hot, you know. And at one end were two ladies who presided over the bread and butter. They were the only people who were allowed to do the bread and butter, because nobody else could possibly get the butter evenly. I don't know what happened when they were off, I can't remember, but they presided over the bread and butter practically all day, you know, and I think they presided over the still room, and this was a really high place to be able to do the bread and butter. The rest of us couldn't. Most of them were seasonal, they were the few regulars.
So what percent would you say was seasonal and what percent kept on, maybe?
Oh, I would say only about 10% were the regulars, the winter ones. And then perhaps some who came back every year. I don't know why they did, really. I don't know why I did, come to think of it. It couldn't have been that bad.
Could you take us a walk in your mind's eye round, say if you were going from your kiosk into the kitchens, the still rooms... Mm. The cafe, and what you'd see?
Well, one part of it that I think was destroyed was the balcony. When you went from the gardens, you went through the balcony. It was beautiful. It was an open balcony. It was hung with flowers, and it was lovely. And then you went into the big entrance hall of the actual ballroom, and then through into the cafe, and then through there, behind there, into the still room. But the balcony reminds me of quite an amusing incident, since I was a student. I was put on there one day to wait on. Well, I wasn't a waitress, so I didn't know the prices, but they were short on the balcony, so they asked me to go and help. So I did, and what they were doing for me, when I got my tray filled up, one of the waitresses would look at it and count it up and tell me how much to charge for the whole tray. So this I did, and on one occasion I was doing this, and there was two couples, one rather superior man, and they wanted their bills separately. And I had the tray, the contents of the whole tray. So I just said, oh, I'm sorry, that's a bit of a problem. Meaning to go on to explain that I wasn't regular and didn't know the prices. And he produced a piece of paper and a pencil and said, it's all right, dear. If you can't spell sandwiches, just draw them. That really happened. I mean, when I think back over that, I think, I was pretty livid, but I think I'd have been more livid now. So anyway, when I went back, Miss Madrill rather prided herself on having students. You know, she rather liked that. And so she said, you should have said, they taught me to spell at my university. I said, well, what are you, college, actually? A training college. But she liked to have students, but it was really very insulting. I mean, that's the way people treated, treat anybody like that. They just... put you all on the same plane as the lowest of the low, you know, patronising.
So did quite a lot of the visitors treat you badly, or were they generous?
No, not on the whole, no. No, you didn't get many, you got your odd complaints. I think one of the worst jobs was sitting on the cash desk, which I didn't do very often in the villa. If you've ever imagined sitting on a cash desk and watching people eat all the time, it's awful. And the lady who did it regularly, I mean, she spent a lifetime doing it. I don't know how on earth she did. And then, to our utter amazement, she was quite an elderly lady. Well, fairly, I suppose people look old to you in their mind when you're young. But she certainly wasn't young. And the end of one summer, off she went. And she and the entertainment manager, Sidney Perry, were married. I don't know what happened to them, but off they went. I mean, everybody was absolutely, because they hadn't seen that he used to come in for his meals, but nobody had seen this courtship going on over the cash desk. So everybody was absolutely astounded by this, because he was a funny character. He was an excellent manager, a rather peculiar character, but an excellent manager. He rang that villa entertainment complex. Has never been as tightly run, I don't think, as when Sidney Perry had it. He was excellent. They had good shows. They had these Sunday concerts, you know, that were absolute sellouts. And Dolos every night, and a supporting band, you know, for the interval. No records or tin music. You had supporting orchestra, a supporting band, and then the big one. And the curtains would close on the supporting one, and then you'd hear, there'd be a bit of shuffling around, and then you'd hear it begins in the mood. The curtains would go back, and the band would be on, and then Joe would come in and skate in and swivel around and do his flourish. It was great. Marvellous.
So you were mentioning the romance between the manager and the cash lady. Were there any other romances among the staff?
I don't remember any other romances, but that was such a startling... Of course, all the girls all talked about their love life, you know, and I could remember being sent for aspirins from my colleague in the kiosk, who had a terrible bad headache because she'd fallen out with one of her boyfriend who was in the band. But it all, and I met him on the way, and he said, "Where are you going? What are those aspirins for? Are they for Jess?" And I said, "Yes, they are." So, well, anyway, it all ended happily because they got married as well. But that's the only romance I remember. That's like two romances, yes, I do. But most of the band fellows were attached, I think, but this one wasn't. He was very nice, actually. Yeah.
What part would using the Villa Marina play in the daily routine of the visitors, from your perception?
Oh, I think some people just came and I suppose, I don't know how much people travelled around the island, but I should think that some of them would come in day after day after day. And then not only that, we had people who came for the summer. We had a lovely man who used to stay down South Island, a man called Mr. Hurst, and he was a regular and he came in every day, you know, for the entire summer, and you knew it was autumn when Mr. Hurst had disappeared, and there were a few like that. But I think a lot of people made it their centre.
Was there ever any feeling of competition with the palace, say?
Well, I never remember any, because on my days off occasionally, you know, in glutton for punishment, I would go to the palace gardens. And of course, it was only a very, it was like a little pocket handkerchief compared to the beautiful, and the villa was beautiful. I think they've ruined it now, but it was beautiful. And this was just like a little square behind the palace, the Colosseum, of course, now gone, long gone. And I used to think, oh, you know, this isn't very much, and it attracted a few, but I don't think it ever had. Maybe the palace ballroom, yes, that's different, but the actual, yes, I suppose it was right, because the squads were at the, why am I going a bit later on, the squads were there when I was in, the squads were there late 50s, I can't remember whether they were there at the beginning, but I suppose a bit of competition, of course there was Derby Castle as well. We weren't allowed to go to Derby Castle as young people because they had a bar. When you think about now, the villa wasn't licensed.
What?
The palace was licensed, but it wasn't in the ballroom. You had to go to a separate place. But the castle, the Derby Castle, had a bar sort of rather on the premise, on the, you know, near the ballroom. And as young people, we weren't allowed to go there. And of course, the Highland Ball was a great thing. Now that's going to the palace. The Highland, they had what they used to call Scotch, which of course is a completely word you should never use. They never said Scottish fortnight. They always said Scotch fortnight. When Glasgow practically emptied, and they all came here, and they had a Highland Games at the Nunnery, and they had a Highland Ball at the Palace, and it was tremendously busy. You know, well, what we've lost. I gather that the highlight of it all was sort of 1910, 11, 12, but it was pretty busy in the 50s, compared to now, anyway.
What would you say that was the sort of hallmark of the 50s, you know, that sort of defined the decade for Manx tourism? What were the sort of... What was the feel of the times?
There was no... As far as I can see, there was no market for the heritage things we're doing now, you know, which, of course, I thoroughly approve of. I think this is where the future lies. But it was really a bucket and spade Blackpool holiday. It was the mill towns, you know... that this was their holiday. Some of them came every year to Douglas. I suppose looking back on it now, I wouldn't have liked to have done it. Not much sense of adventure there, but it was a Blackpool type holiday. And I mean, it was good entertainment. We had all the good stuff. Of course, we always did very well for films. We used to get the films here, winter and summer, pre-release, pre-London. I don't know why, but I mean, as a young person, I went to cinema a lot, and they were films that were not even premiered in London. I remember seeing Whiskey Galore. there were so many cinemas. There was Strand, the Picture House in Strand Street. There was the Royalty. There was the Crescent Cinema in the summertime, that great big enormous cinema. Of course, there was Onken, Peel, Port Erin. I mean, the pictures were the... And they have a tremendous use of the pictures, too.
Which was your favourite of all the cinemas?
Oh, I don't know, really. The Crescent was lovely because it was so big and airy. You know, I like that. But I don't know. They were all nice. The Regal, the organ came up in the Regal. But they've all gone. It's just incredible that they've all gone. It's terrible. I don't know. Everything's going over on the ferry to Douglas Head was another attraction. You used to go from Douglas Pier, it only took you about 5 minutes, over to Douglas Head, and that was marvellous. We used to do that on our days off. It was lovely.
Well, tell me some of the things, because you only got the one day off when you were working. so what would you yourself do for recreation?
A day off? Oh, I don't know. Walk the dog. well, we'd sometimes go to Douglas Head on the ferry. I can't really remember what I did on my days off, really. Caught up with some rest. It was pretty tiring.
You were mentioning about Felmont Hall before.
Oh yes, well that was all over in 1940. I mean, when the 1939, when the war came, Felmont Hall finished. Felmont never came back after the war. That finished. The minstrels were on the.
Can you tell me a bit about the hall? Because you were saying a little before we started the tape about what went on there, and would that be something that you saw as a young child?
Absolutely, that's something I saw as a young child. I would be under 5 years old. There was a hall in Strand Street, just near the end of Strand Street, towards Granville Street. I don't know which one it is now. It's not very far down. I don't know what building is there now. And it was just a pianist, and everybody flocked in to sing the popular songs, and especially on a wet day, it was packed out. And schoolboys would, if they hadn't been to be at school early because of exam times, would go in there on the way to school, have a good sing. And I myself... remember being taken and pushed through this enormous crowd to the foot of a woman and being told, "This is Miss Ford," and looking up and seeing, well, she must have been well in her 60s, I calculate, by then, a rather Queen Mother style lady in a floating dress and a hat, and I think it was a little cloche hat, and she was in sort of purple, and they were saying, "This is Miss Ford," in hushed tones, and of course as a small child, I thought, well, so what? I couldn't think what all the fuss was about. And I remember I used to ask, my father worked for Felman, and I used to ask to be taken, if the office girl was going out, could I go with her? And they'd say, "Oh, no, you can't go through the street. It's taking Joan enough energy to push herself through without you," because it really was so packed. You had to fight your way through the streets.
You mentioned that your father worked for Felman.
Yes.
Can you tell me a bit about his sort of working life and his career, how he came to be involved in
well,
that?
I honestly don't know. I mean, is it dreadful? I mean, I don't know. There are so many things that you should ask, perhaps. My father died 44 years ago, so I was only 20 when he died. I know that he was actually in the music business. He was Leighton Orr's music. But there were three of the family in that. So he had a sideline. He had two sidelines, really. He had a cigarette business, a shop at the Castle Mona, which was a little gold mine, but it meant that he had free access to cigarettes, which contributed to his early death, unfortunately. But he also had an office in Victoria Street, a room where, for his Felman's work. My mother used to help there as well. And I can remember the minstrels coming in on a Friday for their pay. And I was terrified of these minstrels on Douglas Head. If I was taken up to Douglas Head, I was absolutely terrified, because the show was in... The audience sat in two halves, a front half, and then the cheaper section, I suppose. And they would come out with their collecting boxes, and I knew that they only went round the front half, and I used to duck down because I was terrified of them. And then they came in on a Friday for their pay, white, of course. And I can remember them saying, "This is Mr. Sharp." And he was actually almost albino coloured, you know. He was very, very pale with sandy hair. "This is Mr. Sharp. There's nothing to be frightened of." And I used to look at him. And then next time I went up there, I still screamed. I just hated it. But they were popular shows. Douglas Head was a real centre of entertainment. Those days have gone forever. The war finished all that. Of course, Laurie Ford had her cottage here and on the Arbol Beach. She had a connection with Peel. But I don't know. I don't even know when she died. I don't know much about her, really. But she was.
Did you live on the island before and after?
I was born in Onchan, and I lived on the island until I went to college, and then came back from the, you know, from the college terms to work at the villa, and then did taught away for a few years, and then returned. But by the time I got back to live, it had changed.
When did you return? What year?
58.
How did you feel it was changing by that point?
Well, it wasn't. I don't think it was as busy then, and gradually it got less and less and less.
Did you notice any change in the type of people that would come, or anything like that?
No, I don't really think so.
Just less of the same.
Just less of the same, really. I think it was when continental holidays became cheap and you could guarantee the sunshine. Of course, I can, looking back on a rose-coloured spectacles. I don't remember as much rain.